The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Muddy Knees Media.
This news just in, listeners. The Athletic is extending its £1 a month offer for all new subscribers, meaning you can get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a brand new breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts for just a quid. This deal won't last forever, though, so don't miss out. Sign up today at theathletic.com/Scottish Show.
Yes, that's me, Andrew Slavin. I've lost my head, and I don't know what the English have been banging on about all these years, because how they shoot out is a class. That's right, welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. I'm joined by someone who loves these International Week podcasts because she gets to talk about her favourite team, the Scotland national team. It's senior producer at Motherwell, Laura Brannan. And
hello.
Also... Hello, Laura. And also someone who doesn't like these International Week podcasts because he has to analyse the tactical approach of just one team, the Scotland national team. It's JJ Bull from The Telegraph. Hello.
Hi. Oh, I got time to say hi, but Laura, rushing in.
I was just trying to get,
call
get
yourself
in there
a host.
Nice and quick. I know, unbelievable. Some people call me other things. We've got in bold on the script, Laura has been sticking up for Tony Watt this week.
I'll be honest, it's not what I thought we were going to lead on after we've just clinched our place in the playoff finals, but
nope,
sure, let's go for
but
it.
But it's in bold, so I'm going to say it. So why were you sticking up for Tony Watt?
You know what? It was an interview you did with a local paper in Motherwell. And
name it.
No, I won't name it. I won't name the journalist. But it was just the way that the end of the interview was, and we couldn't let Tony go without asking him about that goal against Barcelona. And his answer was very much, oh, well, it's in the past and I don't really want to talk about it. I've moved on and such and such. And then in the tweet, they teased the article by saying, and we talk about that goal against Barcelona. And I just kind of had enough and went, look, I just said it on Twitter. The boy's got other things to think about in his career. That's something to think about when you've retired and everything's all done and finished. Let him move on. He's 26 years old. He's done a lot since Celtic and he's going to be doing a lot more as well. It just kind of felt as though, like, the journalists are just getting a bit repetitive. And he kind of said it himself. He said 95% of interviews he does, this gets mentioned, and it happened 8 years ago. So let's just move on.
That's kind of symptomatic of a lot of traditional media and old media. I remember working on a certain TV show at a certain TV station where one certain presenter was desperate to ask Gareth Southgate about 30 years after it happened about that penalty before he became England manager. Well done. Very current. Really current.
They're always the same answers as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tiresome. Well, look, later on, we're going to be previewing the new Scottish Football League season. And yes, we will talk about Celtic v Rangers because that is looming large. But first, let's go back in time to last Thursday night.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
And all of a sudden, a nation cheers! A nation believes! It has gone Scotland's way after all!
After a tense and pretty dire 120 minutes at Hampden, Scotland took part in their first ever competitive penalty shootout against Israel and got the job done to keep their Euro 2020 hopes alive. I won't lie, I'll ask for your opinion, but this game was really, really hard to watch. But gladly, or thankfully, we're quite hard to beat these days. What do you guys think?
I mean, it was extremely hard to watch, but not from the same perspective you're going to talk about. For me, it was the nerves of pacing up and down my living room. How do people sit and watch a game of football when it's that important? I don't know how people can sit on a couch. I was kicking every ball in my living room. It was so unbelievably stressful. I was exhausted, but I'm still exhausted. It's half a week later.
Yeah, thankfully I had my wee girl. It was our first
time watching Scotland play. And fair play, she had a lot of enthusiasm. She was screaming all over the place. She's only 6 months, but it might not be Scotland's performance that she was screaming at. But JJ, how did you think Scotland got on in this game, despite, obviously, I was taking it to penalties and we won and stuff, but in terms of performance, it was dire, mate.
I don't remember watching the game. It's hard. That's
to,
a weird
it's
thing.
It's easy to forget.
Yeah. Like, did I watch it? I think I did. I definitely watched the penalties. My favourite bit of the whole thing, I mean, you could have just ignored all of it and just gone straight to the penalties because nothing really happened. It was basically Scotland are slowly becoming Northern Ireland part two. Hopefully not Electric Boogaloo, but it's going to be, you know, hard to beat and grind games out. And international football often isn't that good. You always forget that. Or do I? I know, I always remember it, so I don't like it. I have to remember this. Yeah, Kenny McLean's little confident smile as he steps up to take the penalty was superb. Like, you knew he was going to score it.
Yeah.
Oh, I had zero faith.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought, of all players, I just thought, why Kenny McLean? I don't know.
He can hit a dead ball. He's really good.
I know. He's taken penalties before, but there was just something about, I don't know if he's just not got the presence. At that point, maybe I want my kind of captain to step up. I don't know. Just, he didn't fill me with the same confidence that, see, when Cal McGregor showed up, I was so confident. And maybe I was wrong, but John McGinn as well, even though it was the worst penalty ever. But no, I was completely, at that point, I was not even looking at the TV going, why, of all players, don't let him take it. But he proved me completely wrong, and I absolutely love him for it.
It wasn't just the players taking the penalties, though, as well, because David Marshall saved for the first one against Sahavi.
Really good save.
I mean, it gave us such hope to just keep on going. Because I think that was the only save, wasn't it?
For it to be the first save as well, for the first shot, that changed it. I think that changed the tone, because obviously us taking the penalties first helped, but for him to do that the first time they stepped up, it was massive, and I think it just gave our boys the confidence to go for it.
And obviously going into this game, we were kind of going into it quite disappointed and nervous because we had a positive COVID test from Armstrong. And then that also meant that Kieran Tierney and Ryan Christie had to isolate, so they weren't involved in the game. Players that were very important for Steve Clarke. But he also went for a bit different up front with Dykes and McBurney. And we've said before, JJ, that McBurney would be better in a two. But I don't know if I really felt much confidence going forward at all in Scotland.
Well, the problem is not the two strikers. It's just how they construct play. I think we'll cover this more when we talk about the Slovakia game, to be honest. But I think when you look at the way the team was set up for this game, you had McGregor and Jack basically doing exactly the same role as a double pivot, and they're very, very similar, so you get the same kind of thing out of both of them. McGinn, you want to be a supporting striker, which he sort of was. Like, he's a midfielder, obviously, but you want him to make runs to support the two forwards, which he was trying to do. But if he's a bit deeper, then you can go box to box and help out that way, and you've got three. And because Israel were playing a three, kind of getting outnumbered a bit with a two at times, everything's going wide, but you've only got Robertson, really, who can affect play wide, because O'Donnell's just not as good going forward as, you know, as you maybe want him to. Yeah. And McBurney and Dykes. So the plan should be that the ball can go up quickly from one of Cooper or McTominay to one of McBurney or Dykes, who can then lay it back to McGinn or something and then progress play from there. But they were never in positions to receive the ball further forward, and Israel kept it tight. But then that's what Scotland were doing. It was really not very interesting, because both teams were more worried about conceding than they were about going forward, which kind of makes sense, especially with Scotland having to put that makeshift team together. The result is great.
It certainly felt like a match that had a lot riding on it, because it was Scotland's biggest game for over a decade. And yeah, we are through, and it looks like we're going to be facing Serbia now, because, like, well, thank God we're not facing Norway. But yeah,
Norway,
yeah, I know, yeah. Exactly. It's a tough one. I kind of always thought we'd be playing Norway, obviously with Erling Haaland, but it looks like Serbia, who won 2-1. A few familiar names that we'll know of: Dusan Tadic, Aleksandar Mitrovic. And the 12th of November is the date, the big date, where we could be in our first major competition for a very long, well, since 1998. Laura, I can see you on our Zoom meeting right now, and you're just wincing. You're so nervous.
I am. And you know what? Like, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about getting to this stage, and I was like, I don't think we should be playing this game, and I don't want to qualify in this way. No. And you know what? See, after that experience on Thursday night, I don't care how we do it. I just want to do it now. I don't care if I'm sitting in my living room on my own. Just going to just get us there and I'll enjoy it next summer.
Well, let's hope we do get there, Laura. And then one thing that was a bit odd in the build-up to this game was, or I think it was after the game, James McFadden kind of accusing Scotland fans of giving Oliver McBurnie a hard time because of his English accent. It took me by surprise. It's not something I've noticed on social media or anywhere before, because my viewpoint is that video that was leaked where McBurnie was being asked, are you looking forward to being involved with the Scotland squad? And he kind of gave a very, no, I'm not really looking forward to it at all response. Am I wrong? Does he get stick for having an English accent?
I don't think that it's anything to do with the English accent. We've had boys before who are English and have English accents and who are Scottish with English accents. And I don't think people are that daft to just be that closed book about it. McBurnie does come with baggage, though, and he's the first to admit it. And I know he's done a lot since to try and prove that he loves playing for Scotland and his loyalties to the national team and everything. But he's never really recovered from that video in the tunnel when he did say that. And he's pulled out of squads before through injury and then played for his club a couple of days later. And I think as well, and whether it's right or wrong, I think the fact that the way he dresses, he doesn't wear shin pads, he runs around with socks halfway down his legs. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I think it gives off an impression of, well, I don't really care. And I think some people have picked up on that as well. It's a bit like, well, he's just strutting around like he owns the place, but he's never really done anything to own it. And I think his price tag as well, when he moved, and it was what, like 12 and a half million or something? And
20.
It was such a 20 million. I knew there was a two in there. It's just such a large price tag for a Scottish player. And it's not even the one that you'd probably expect it to be if you were to pick anyone out of the Scotland team. I don't think it would be him that you'd select. So I think it comes with almost like he's got something to prove, which isn't really fair, because he's never asked for that, to be fair.
It's like he has to prove a bit more about himself no matter what. I've not heard it either, but I don't doubt that there are many people who expect him to have to try a little bit harder because of his Englishness that he may or may not have. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying he's English, but that's not that'd be a bad thing. I've dug myself into a hole with my English parents. Anyway, there's something about that, and having the accent, about not belonging, a bit of identity kind of issues there, and some people expect him to prove more. The price tag's probably relevant. The other thing is, he's been pretty pish when he's played for Scotland.
Yeah.
And people, I think a lot of people expect him to be much, much better than he is, or to be a different kind of player. A lot of people think if a striker comes on with 20 million, he's a goal scorer, and McBurnie isn't. He's a link man. He's a guy, he's a support striker. And you saw it far more in, I think, in King of Slovakia when McBurnie came on, that Steve Clark, who's a very good manager, had to bring on Callum Patterson afterwards just so they had someone who was pushing the defence backwards, because all McBurnie does is you'll notice it often the ball's wide. McBurnie won't make a run beyond the shoulder, beyond the last man. He'll drop into the space behind it, what you'd maybe call a 10 space, to look for a cutback. So, I mean, that's fine when you've got two strikers, or you've got an overlapping forward that's going to come over and, you know, take that attacking position up. But it means that you're kind of, you're blunting your attack, so you've got no pointy bit of the arrow. It's like, yeah, so that's a real kind of
you and
problem.
Your arrows, JJ.
Well, it's a problem for your attacking shape. That's a real problem. You need your depth and your width, and if you don't have McBurnie pushing the defence back, you lose your depth. So he is good at certain things, but it's stuff you don't, it's not very sexy. Keeping the ball in the corner.
People look at numbers as well, though. I think it's well over 10 games he's had for Scotland, 0 goals. And you look at Lyndon Dykes, who's got 4 games, 2 goals. Even Lauren Shanklin's got maybe 2 or 3 games, and he's still got a goal to his name.
Maybe like Emil Heskey was really underappreciated at the time for not, because he didn't score enough goals, but he did an awful lot off the ball, which was wanted. Like, there's a reason Steve Clarke plays him and likes him in the team.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, if he scored goals, I think people would like him a lot more. But the problem he's got is that he doesn't, and maybe his role is underappreciated. But, I mean, you can see what Dykes does already, and Dykes is more of a threat, like, directly. So he is
You
more
say directly,
lovable.
But I actually think Dykes is kind of a good mixture of both. He is a good link-up player, and he is always, his main focus is to get into the box. He is direct, but I mean, it's funny how many times he just chests the ball down to assist into a player. He's such a well-rounded footballer that it seems to benefit Scotland. but he just is missing that man that can find him every single time. But let's talk about the next game, which didn't matter so much.
This season, the Premier League's going to be a little different. But at Paddy Power, we're trying to look at the upside. Avoid unnecessary journeys, that's Fulham's trip to Anfield off. Self-isolate, some midfielders do that very effectively. Avoid European travel, shouldn't be a problem for Everton fans. When you think about it, not that much has changed, really. New normal, same old football. Just like Paddy Power's Acca Cracker. Get a free bet if one leg of your 4+-fold Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Min odds 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive excludes shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it, totally ad-free, via The Athletic. Andrew Considine,
I wanna make you mine. Ooh, those the words that Steve Clarke said on Friday as he drafted the Aberdeen defender into his squad. Great story, very good song, JJ.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Let's look at Considine straight away. Last played for the under-21s over 13 years ago. He made his Aberdeen debut over 16 years ago. This is a decision that he probably thought would never have happened, and you must have been the happiest man in London, JJ.
What a man, what a time, what a performance, what a win, my word. Everyone in Aberdeen, I think, is really, really proud of Andy Considine. It's very odd because he's always been at the club and been a player who's been in the team, but I don't think anyone's really ever valued him quite so highly or respected his qualities because they haven't really been entirely evident for a wee while. But now, at the age of 33, he's really quite a good defender for Aberdeen at this level, and I think he did quite well coming into the team. But it's a story that's the nice part. Like, you just think that that's passed you by, and he's a great professional, really well respected by all the staff at the club, all the players. You never hear people saying anything bad about him. I know people who work with him as well who just talk really highly of him. He's just a good guy, doing his coaching badges. I think he's doing his UEFA A now. So yeah, I don't think you can really hold anything against him getting in that game. Only thing, like, everyone's maybe gone a bit over top of how good he was. I think he did very well. And the reason Steve Clarke brought him in, he says, was that he's playing in a three in the left side for Aberdeen this season, and that's what he wants to play at Scotland. So by bringing a player who understands the position, it's going to be a lot safer defensively having that there. It makes total sense. You can play left back if he needs to, but you bring experience and leadership, which is obviously very important in a team in a big, crucial game, even though he was very nervous.
Well, his stats were good as well. I noticed he's second in the passing stats in terms of pass completion.
But that doesn't matter, Slaven, as well.
Yeah, I know.
Short sideways passes.
Yeah, I get that. But at the same time, you know, I think he is. He's an average player. But even his average performances for Aberdeen, average is fine for Scotland. If you don't put a foot wrong, which he didn't, then that's absolutely fine.
Well, I'd say, actually, to be really super harsh on my favourite player of all time, Andrew Considine.
My God.
I'm exaggerating for comic effect. There's a couple of times he was caught out defensively with his positioning. So, because Aberdeen, he plays a man-marking system, so he's always following the man in to midfield, which happens a lot. And if you do that in a zonal system, it causes problems because other people have to cover for you. But yeah, Robertson to his left, and he had he was playing central defence. Gallagher was in the middle, looking after him. And there's both occasions that he went forward and got caught. The ball went through his legs, and one, I think, he had cover. So it worked out fine. And it may well have been, actually, that then took that player out of the move anyway. Otherwise, he started getting stuck in later on. You can see he was nervous at the start, but calm, composed, and played like he was... like he's been in that team for a wee while. He's putting a better performance than I've seen other players put in anyway.
Yeah, well, first performance, first win. Not bad for Considine. What are your thoughts, Laura?
I find this very entertaining. I expected this from JJ, but what I didn't expect is it from everyone else. And it feels like the SFA, not so much the SFA, the Scotland National Team, like social media, the journalists. I was listening to Sports Sound last night. I just feel like everyone has, and even in social media as well, has just been going a wee bit over the top about this. He was essentially an emergency pick. Steve Clarke knows he wanted to play the three at the back. Obviously, I understand why he was picked. He's playing that for a club. He knows how to do it. But it's not really building for the future. And I don't think it sends out a great message to the young boys that are kind of working their way through, or the young boys that are already in the squad, who I understand would have to have played out of position. But this is not a long-term solution for us. And for everyone to be going so over the top about this, it was great for him, this is a dream come true for him, and he did so well when he came in. Yes, I love to see players wanting to play for Scotland, and I want to see it meaning a lot to them. But, I mean, he's not a long-term solution for us.
Laura, last week you said we're not building for the future. You said it needs a team right now. That's literally what you said.
Look,
so which
I
is
just,
it?
I just want to win games.
What is the vendetta the against Considine?
No, the thing is, I just want to win games, okay? So I'm completely chuffed to bits. He came in, he did well, he kept a clean sheet. I have nothing against the guy. I do. It's the 3 points that's the most important. I just don't really get why the media are going so over the top about it. That's the only thing.
It is what the media does. And it's funny because if it had all gone wrong and if we'd lost the game, you could say that some media outlets would be calling for Clark's head. You could say, why is he including Considine? Why isn't someone getting an opportunity? They might bust the gut. I can understand both sides, really. But it's the romanticism of it as well, when it's just, on the face of it, seems like a good guy who's worked his balls off for a long time, and he gets an opportunity and he does fine and he gets a win. I can kind of understand why people are just kind of happy. And don't we want to just be happy in Scotland for once?
Exactly. And also, watching that game, Scotland were, again, not very good to watch.
Oh, no.
I much prefer that kind of performance where we grind it out, like Northern Ireland or something like that, and get the results. What's it? How long is it since we lost the game now?
Unbeaten in seven.
Yeah, unbeaten in seven. It's just over a year. And I get that Clark is trying to be a bit more pragmatic and a bit more defensive-minded, but I do struggle to see where the attacking threat is for Scotland. It's very difficult to see the game plan going forward, because in that second half, we were a far better team. And I actually really liked some of the football going forward. I don't know what was said at half-time, but the freedom of going forward was a lot better than the first half.
In terms of Israel, I don't think anything's changed. We struggled against them in the first Nations League game against them last time around, away from home. And then we beat them 3-2 at home. And I think we actually came from behind in that game. And then again, we struggled just last month against them. We are very evenly placed with Israel. And I think it just came to a head last week. Couldn't get a shot on target. Neither of us could. And we couldn't get any goals. And I dread to think what November's game's going to be like. Because here we go. Right back to it. We have Israel again. Cannot wait for that.
Call the Coast Guard, because I agree with Laura. Wow. Exactly. It's exactly what I think. I was going to say, like, in terms of a game plan, I mean, the game plan is to be hard to beat and to try and attack mostly down the left with Robertson. That's where most of the play was focused. I think you saw in the second half especially, the forward press worked really well on the left-hand side. So you had Fraser, Dykes and Robertson and another midfielder coming across, Austin McGinn. They knew exactly where to be and when. They knew what the triggers were, and they were pushing and they were showing the ball wide to then press it. So set the trap, they were keeping the ball up there. Really, really well done, I thought. And that's one of the things that'll hopefully work going forward. The right side's not strong because it's Stephen O'Donnell, which is just something you got to do. But also because you had Dykes up front on his own from the start in this game, it was a slightly different kind of shape because Fraser was both a striker and a wide player. So he was working the channels, and then you had Dykes next to him. But Fraser's mostly on the left. So it's like they played a forward two, but lopsided almost. So they are almost overloading the one side of the pitch. I think it works. I think what we're really seeing is the start of Clark putting his influence onto the team. It'll take a long time for it to come through, but you can see it now. And although it's not great to watch sometimes, I think the second half you saw players being in positions to receive those forward passes. One of them was from our boy Andy Considine, like a long pass into chest to Dykes, who can lay it off, and then the next ball goes forward. So it's not always third man runs. Rather than just having third man runs, you have one ball going forward and someone else goes. So you're still getting that movement and running in behind to take the ball forward, and it'll get better with time. But it depends if other teams suss us out, and if they lock down that left side, then it's very hard for us to create.
You highlight that a lot of the football goes down the left-hand side, but the goal came from the right, and it was a great goal, really well worked. Robertson winning the ball on the left, and then it get fashioned out to the right really quickly. And it was O'Donnell's run, for me, that created the space and the movement, and he lifted it into Lyndon Dykes, and it was a great finish. It was actually the first time really good football.
For the first times that the wing-backs made underlapping runs as well, because they're normally going outside. Because he makes the underlap, then he turns up in the space. Oh, it's a really good ball from O'Donnell as well. I keep feeling like I'm being harsh, slagging him off. Like, he's decent. I really like Stephen Donald as a player. But the cross is perfect, and the timing of the run, just watching it, I don't know how he manages, why he's not being marked at that one point. It's really bad defending from Slovakia, but maybe that's what happens when you're kind of a makeshift team put together.
Well, this is it. It's four goals in our last four games, I've seen. We've managed one shot on target in 270 minutes against Israel and Slovakia. We're getting points, we're progressing, but are we just happy with this? Is this fine? Is this fine, Laura, to accept?
Yeah, it is, because we're getting the points, we're getting the results. Look, I have watched far too many games where it's glorious defeat, and everyone gives it, oh, but we're building for the future, and it's all about long term, we're planning long term, and this is for next campaign going on, and like we've came so close, and you come out of Hampden broken hearted, but everyone's like, oh, but we played really well. And it's like, I don't care, because I just want to win games for a change. I just want the success for a change, and I don't care whose arse it hits off of in the 94th minute. Just get the ball in the back of the net, and we'll worry about the performances some other time. It's not for the here and now.
Efficient football from Steve Clarke. I do look at the Slovakia team as well and notice that there were 9 changes in this game for the team that beat Republic of Ireland on penalties. I just wonder, like, I'm all about, I understand like squad rotation at international level if you're protecting, you know, fitness levels and whatnot. But it does make me wonder, you know, this is effectively looks like a second string Slovakia team to me, and we're still struggling. We're still struggling.
I wondered about that. I wondered if Slovakia were tired from their 120 minutes, so were preempting their own fitness, or they were second guessing our fitness and thought, well, if we freshen it up, they'll struggle as a result. But I mean, I imagine that would have made it harder for Scotland in terms of analysis, because they changed so many players around. That's twice as much work for their team.
And Scotland didn't change so many players around, did they? I know John Fleck came in, Kenny McLean came in. It was the midfield mostly that changed.
Yeah. And then obviously Constein as well, and Fraser started as well, because he didn't start the game. Yeah. So it was 4 changes. So yeah, I mean, we did kind of shake up a wee bit, but the formation stayed the same, and the players that were involved, the only real kind of fresh faces were Fleck and Considine. So from a Slovakian perspective, it was a lot easier for them to analyse this game in preparation.
The formation was a little bit different. It was a little bit different, like, especially with having Fraser instead of, just because of the players you put in. It might be the same on paper, but because the players naturally make it different. And like I was kind of touching on earlier on, I think one of the problems actually with this shape, and I don't really like a 3-5-2, which is essentially what it is because if your wing backs don't push forward and are really aggressive, it's very easy to keep them back in a 5, and that suddenly limits your midfield. You've got no width when you try and progress the ball, so the centre backs can give it to a midfielder, and then they need to look forward for a pass, and all they've got is a striker directly ahead of them. Suddenly it's very easy for their team to squash you in and limit the space, and you can't do much with it. So I thought focusing on being a bit deeper and making sure that Slovakia didn't create anything, and they didn't really create anything. There's a couple of scary moments. I'm sure you found some of those to watch, Lauren, although you weren't quite as fast with this one.
Didn't feel as nervous watching this one, and not purely because of what was riding on it, because I do understand it as a big game for us. But
it's because Constein was there.
Didn't feel like...
Confidence. Andrew Confidence Considine.
I just didn't feel like Slovakia were really shown anything in front of goal, and I didn't really feel... Yeah. Nervous at any stage towards the kind of last 10 minutes, which normally gets to, is the worst stage, and you're just thinking, just punt the ball, just punt the ball. I think the time wasting down at the corner flag was something I have never probably seen from a Scotland team before.
The sh-tousery was fantastic.
Honestly, to see that from a Scotland team, going on earth, that's a whole new life experience for me.
Yeah, credit where credit's due for McBurney coming in and just absolutely highlighting how much of a bastard he is. Just holding up the ball in the corner and just having a bit of a laugh with the Slovakian defenders. Same for like Patterson as well. Absolutely brilliant. I don't think we'll see much of that on Wednesday though, because we've got Czech Republic top 2 coming head to head, and it looks like we'll face a much stronger Czech Republic team this time around, because last time obviously it was a massively second rate string. I think it was the third team that they came out against us. Obviously they've won.
Yeah, they beat Israel, right? I think this they've brought in a reserve team on the off chance that the same thing happens again with their COVID testing. I don't know the ins and outs of why they've done it, in case there were cases and they're worried about the track and trace. So far, it all seems good that it'll be the first team we're playing against, but they've kind of preempted it this time. I think it'll be a much tougher game. It was difficult, don't get me wrong, last time around. I think it'll be even harder. But this game is massive for us to still be in it, and still have it in our hands halfway through a group stage is huge for us. To still be top of the group, but to break away, see if we're to create a gap between us and Czech Republic, who are in second place just now. There'd be 4 points in it if we win. To go into the last two games in that sort of control is kind of unheard of for Scotland. But it's also worth remembering why it's important in the Nations League, because there's going to be four group winners, but it's not like last year's Nations League where all four group winners go into a playoff. It's the best two of those four winners. So even if we win the group, it's still not necessarily good enough. We still have to have the most points and the best goal difference and so on and so on. So every game is huge in just doing the best in that sense. So it's really big. And plus, the added bonus as well for if we were to win our league is promotion to Path A for the next Nations League, which would be connected to the Euro 2024, and it would also mean that playoffs would be a lot easier for that one. To clinch a playoff would be a lot easier in that one, because essentially, and what you can expect would happen, is every team in Path A, which is your likes of Belgium and England and Spain, all your big countries, they would qualify the normal way through the normal qualifying system. So it means that we would have an even bigger chance of reaching playoffs for the next tournament after that. So it's all got a knock-on effect what's happening right now.
One thing that we haven't really mentioned yet so far, before we go on to give our championship preview, this game was the first time I really believed that Scott McTominay totally fits into this system as the right-sided centre-half, because the amount of times that he was so defensively sound winning the ball, as well, he is that outlet for Scotland at the back that can get the ball forward. His range of passing is excellent, and it really fits into the way Scotland can play. I really believe that makes a lot of sense now to me.
Yeah, that's the point of him. He's a ball-playing centre-back because he's a midfielder technically, but do you not notice how many passes he gives are... they're really not very well weighted. It hits bouncing balls into midfield that are impossible to take down, and it slows down the move. Like, there's a player in there in Scott McTominay, but I just don't quite... I don't think, for example, if he wasn't at Man United, I don't think he'd make Everton better. I don't think he's... You know, I'm trying to work out like what kind of a player he is. He's a ball-winning player, but I think he's also an attacking midfielder. He's tall, so he can play at the back. He's got height, that's going to work. He's quite strong, so he's got that. He's got balance. And he reads the game quite well, but he doesn't know that position as well as others, and there'll be times he's caught out of position, and he is quite regularly, especially when he plays that for Scotland. But if he keeps doing it, if he gets coached on it and develops, he could be a decent option there. And it makes sense technically why he's there, because he can play out from the back, and also it means you can, like Celtic do when they play a three, you have Christopher Eyer or something like that, runs into midfield and you get an overload there. So that's what you want. It's maybe not the best time to experiment with a player in a new position during a crucial qualifying match.
Yeah, well, I think that rounds up our Scotland review. So it's time to look ahead to the start of the new championship season, which is kicking off this weekend. Fingers crossed.
The Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
We've all had to do without football at times this year, but if you're involved with a Championship, League 1 or League 2 club, you've been waiting 7 long months for a game of FIPA. The Championship will hopefully return on Friday night, with teams many expect to be in the top two, Hearts and Dundee, clashing at Tynecastle. Ewan Booth-Robertson has been looking ahead to the new season in the second tier for the 2.1 and joins us now. Thanks for joining us, Ewan. Going to start off straight away with the Hearts. Ludicrously strong favourites of the title, but please tell us why.
Yeah, if you're a betting man, I wouldn't put any money on them because the odds are terrible. But it's just the strength of their squad, really, isn't it? They've got internationals throughout the side. You know, Liam Boyce scored the winning penalty kick the other night for Northern Ireland. You've got Stephen Naismith, who could arguably get back in the Scotland fold, as could Craig Gordon. Michael Smith, experienced internationalist. When Suter comes back, he's probably an internationalist as well. And just throughout their whole side, like picking up Stephen Kingsley from Hull's a great bit of recruitment. And, you know, I don't want to say they're definitely going to win the league, but they're definitely going to win the league.
It's a really good article. If anyone hasn't read it yet, it really points out a lot of things in each team. But sticking with Hearts, I mean, you mentioned Stephen Naismith might actually be a problem from Hearts. How do you mean?
Yeah, I've got a lot of my Hearts friends that have been on my case today after I said that. It was more in terms of the fact that in Hearts' favourite formation, or Robin Nielsen's favourite formation, it's like a 4-2-3-1. So they play a double pivot, which will probably be between Andy Halliday, Andy Irving, or Ollie Lee, until Peter Haring can come back from injury anyway. So number 10 role will be between Naismith and Jamie Walker. And from what I've seen in pre-season and from listening to Hearts fans, I think that Walker is the strongest option in there. So then what do you do with Naismith? Does he play wide? He probably doesn't have the pace there. He's an intelligent player. So Jamie Walker could feasibly play wide, but then you're putting him out his best position. So I wouldn't say Stephen Naismith's a weakness. You know, he's a Scotland international with great pedigree, north and south of the border. I hope he's not listening to this or read my article.
He's definitely not.
Yeah,
oh, he's not listening to us.
He's probably too big time for that, isn't he? He's BBC only. But yeah, I wouldn't say he's a problem, but he's the sort of player he's such a crucial guy to Hearts in terms of his leadership. You know, he's very pipey on the pitch. He doesn't shut up. So if he's not playing, you can't imagine that he'll be happy. So that's why I kind of labelled it a weakness per se. But it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I imagine he will start on Friday night in what is a huge game. And it's televised as well. It's only kind of free football you can watch in Scotland. So I think there'll be huge viewing figures for what will be a tasty game, given the kind of off-the-field scandal between Hearts and Dundee and John Nelms, you know, preference for emails to go missing.
What about, speaking of Dundee, do you reckon they can challenge for promotion, anything like that? Will Charlie Adam, at the age of 104, make a difference to them this season?
I think people have kind of criticised his ability, but he's got it in abundance. And, you know, Graham Dorans, Charlie Adam and Paul McGowan won't be the most youthful pairing, but they've got a youngster in Finlay Robertson who's an outstanding young talent.
Who else do you think might be in the mix for the championships? I know, like, I know Dunfermline have lost Kevin Nisbet, but they can still look strong. Inverness as well are kind of expected to be in the mix as well, aren't they?
Yeah, certainly. Dunfermline have been fortunate enough to beat their last two games, and they'll beat their game tomorrow night against Killy as well. And you mentioned correctly about losing Nisbet, but they've recruited quite well. You know, they kind of, you know, lost a big player, but spent that money in bringing in a good few players. I think I mentioned that Dom Thomas is an outstanding player for that level. You know, he's tricky, he's got a great left foot. Stephen Whittaker's obviously came in from Hibernian, and he's playing in a holding CDM role, which was quite interesting. I talked about it last week, and you know, the value he brings in terms of experience but ability is very good. They're strong at the back, and Paul Watson and Ewan Murray. And up front as well, they've got a pairing of Kevin O'Hara, who was excellent last season for Alloa, and also Declan McManus, who's, you know, kind of been about the clubs at that level, but he's a proven goal scorer. I think that Dunfermline will certainly be up there. It'll be fascinating to see how everything progresses with their kind of injection of money from the German consortium who've invested there, because I think they're going to try and emulate Brentford's successful strategy in terms of the money ball. So I'm really fascinated to kind of see what happens at Dunfermline, because they're a big club. You could argue that they should probably be in the top flight, but I'd say they'd be the biggest challengers along with Dundee. Inverness, that you mentioned there, Laura, I think their biggest strength, I mentioned in my article, is John Robertson. He's done a fantastic job up there, but they've kind of lost a lot of players. They lost their whole back four from the start of last season. You know, Jamie McCart and Rooney went to St Johnstone. Col Donaldson and Kyle Tremarco moved to their bitter rivals, Ross County, and obviously Jordan Whites went to Motherwell. So it'll be interesting to see how they perform this season.
I have to ask you about my beloved Queen of the South. I think a lot of what's expected from them is survival, maybe alongside Alloa. But tell me Queens will be all right this season.
I think they'll be all right. I looked at it and earlier on in the summer, they only had three players, didn't they, Andrew?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's horrible.
So, yeah, I mean, I love Palmerston as an away venue. It's a great away trip, and, you know, Sandra down there makes probably the best cup of tea in Scotland. So
good pies as well, Ewan. Good pies.
I had great pies, and they give you a free token, but I'm always kind of the dilemma. What do you go for? Is it a pie or chips and curry sauce? And I often go for the chips and curry sauce, which is probably a poor decision. but yeah, I think we'll be fine. I mean, Stephen Dobie's 37 now, but he's got ability and abundance, and they've recruited quite well, especially the left-hand side, and James Maxwell from Rangers on loan. And it breaks my heart that he's not official anymore, as Aidan Fitzpatrick, who has come up from Norwich and started well, and they've got Connor Shields on the other side. I don't like to nail my predictions to the mast, but I believe that Queens will be fine.
The big kickoff in League 1 and 2 this weekend. Let's get some odds from Paddy Power, courtesy of producer Charlie. So let's start. Can Cove make it three promotions in a row?
I should co-cove, although Paul Hartley's men are third favourites for the League 1 title at 5-1. Falkirk just ahead of them at 6-4. Favourites for the title are Partick Thistle at 7-5, relegated from the Championship last season. What an eventful year in charge it's been for Ian McCall. The toughest year he's had since he was coaching Andrew Slaven back in the day. But Paddy Power think he'll be celebrating come the end of the campaign.
Oh, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. The Premiership is back on Saturday with a full programme. Who do you fancy, Charlie?
Well, Dundee United take on an Aberdeen side who are having a pretty great season in terms of points per game. Hamilton host St Johnstone, both teams joint bottom on 7 points. Ross County host high-flying Hibs. Laura's off to Paisley as Motherwell travel to St Mirren. And Livy take on Kilmarnock, both teams looking for their third Premiership win on the spin. If you're liking the look of the away teams there and you were so inclined, how about an acca of 5 away wins at 3 o'clock for a little over 60-1, a set of results that will keep JJ and Laura very happy.
Charlie, your voice on this show is most welcome. Superb. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording and it's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, you should probably stop. Stealing all the focus this weekend will be the first Glasgow derby that JJ has looked forward to in years.
Maybe
Celtic v Rangers at Celtic Park. Are you excited, JJ?
I'm off work and I might watch this game on purpose with one of my friends. I really want to see how both teams are against each other. Because it's, as we've been talking about all season long, Celtic have been getting results without playing particularly well. They don't really have to because they've got the players who can get them through. Rangers have been playing well, keeping clean sheets often, but they haven't really been challenged. And when they haven't looked as solid as maybe we thought they were when they weren't challenged, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They've only really been challenged by Hibs so far this season, isn't it?
Who are the best team they've played so far, yeah.
Yeah.
There are also two teams that really thrive in a strange way of not having fans there, because I feel like the Celtic and Rangers fans got on their team's back a lot quicker than other clubs because the expectation levels are higher. So if, say, one of them is struggling at half an hour in and they haven't scored yet against a team that they're deemed to should be presumably 3-0 up at half time, the fans are normally on their backs, giving them a lot of pressure, which makes it tougher for them. But neither side have got that in this occasion. So it's going to be really interesting to see how both respond, because they're both kind of locking heads in this sense, unlike the other teams they've been playing.
Yeah, well, we see kind of like a fiery game. I kind of take what you're saying, Laura. I just think, I wonder if Gerard will start with Alfredo Morelos. Being El Buffalo, I'm sure he's got plenty of beef for Scott Brown. But, you know, if Alfredo Morelos isn't in the side for Rangers, they're probably better served in the fact that they might not get a send-off.
I know I said a couple of weeks ago, and I kind of did say it tongue-in-cheek along the lines of, well, will the players treat this just like any other game? Now, any Celtic and Rangers fan will probably jump at me and say, don't be so stupid, our boys know how big this game is. And I was kind of saying it very kind of flippant, because I've not played football. I've not got the mentality of a player to go out there on the pitch with or without fans. But it will be very interesting to see just who understands this to be the big game that it actually is, and just how many of them really understand it to that extent. And I'm really quite looking forward to hearing the players on the pitch. And it's something that I don't quite enjoy in my job. When I'm hearing the authentic sounds in the stadium, I don't like it, and I actually like switching off during a game, and I listen to the commentary, radio commentary, in my ear when I'm there, because I like to feel like I'm getting that excitement side of things and not just the kind of authentic odd cries from here and there in the one stand and not around the stadium. But I will quite look forward to hearing it on the TV. I know they'll probably pipe in fake crowd noise, but you're still going to pick up some of the players shouting. And it will be interesting to see just who is kind of taking that game by the scruff of the neck in that sense.
I wonder what songs we'll hear on those pumped in crowds crowd noises. Moving swiftly on. One of the things about this game is that the referee has a chance to actually referee it as a game of football and not give them special dispensation because it's the medical firm and they're allowed to go in with all like hard tackles and ridiculous kind of things. A lot of the games that are played, they just referee it as though it's a special occasion you got to play the game. No, I think you should just, as soon as these like horrible tackles go in, get them sent off. Because the referees aren't so influenced by the crowds now, it could make a big difference into how this game is played out and what kind of tackles those players can put in. And also, I'm pretty sure players will be going right into it, regardless of whether they really care about Rangers or Celtic. You know, whoever wins this has got a big early psychological advantage. It could make a big difference to how the rest of the league plays out, especially if it ends early because of a pandemic.
It's interesting because I was going to ask you, how big a game is this? Like, exactly, because there are still going to be three other games for them to play against each other, but it is going to be whoever takes the first scalp. I do believe this no matter what time of the year it is, it's going to be a massive kind of benchmark of how teams will perform.
Jack Wilshere.
Actually, you stole my line. Exactly. Jack Wilshere could be there. I wonder if the Rangers could register him in time if he was to go there.
If there's any league or match you don't want to play in with glass ankles, it's an Old Firm match.
Who was it? Did you not... I think you sent us a WhatsApp saying about Xavi. Spoke about Jack Wilshere going to Rangers. Is that right?
Oh, Xavi's quoted saying he'll be the best player in the Scottish Premiership. I mean, I would be inclined to agree with Xavi, because Wilshere, I mean, it's not quite worked for him because he's got smashed into tiny little bits that literally his ankles are on, you know, they're not, well, not literally, but his ankles haven't really held up very well. It's a shame because he was a real player. But if he were to, everyone always says about Jack Wilshere, if he were to be able to play his game and get on the pitch and play well, he would just look a different level to a lot of other players in that division.
Who has the advantage in this game? Because I look at some of the likely omissions from Celtic. You know, Ryan Christie will be absent. He's quarantining after coming into close contact with Stuart Armstrong on international duty, which we mentioned earlier. He tested positive for COVID-19. And odds on Edouard as well, who had coronavirus too. He has to quarantine. But he might be back, Laura, didn't you say?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it's 10 days if you have COVID, and it's 14 days to isolate if you are just within the vicinity of somebody with COVID. And that's government guidelines, let alone the football guidelines. And when we were talking about it, it was 11 days before the Old Firm game that Edouard was confirmed of having COVID.
So he could be back.
So it could be a case of he is allowed back into the country, or so to speak, back to Celtic Park on the Friday before the game. So his fitness might be in question, or rather not so much fitness, but match sharpness. But I would say if he's available, then I can't see any reason Celtic wouldn't pick him for such a big game.
Maybe we'll see Diego Laxalt as well in this game. Obviously, he was the new signing for Celtic. Don't know, I kind of feel like Rangers are playing the better football right now, and there's been a lot of question marks on Celtic performances of late. But we will look forward to seeing that one. But that's it for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, JJ. Also, thanks to Ewan Robertson. And thanks to the Little Kicks as well for our theme song. And also, welcome back to producer Charlie, who's doing a wonderful job with us. We will miss Abby, but for now, we'll be back next week with the return of the Premiership. Speak to you then.
You've been listening to The Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn.
and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.